politics, politics, politics. You want politics, you got it. Like AC/DC said, if you want blood, you got it. But here, it's if you want political commentary by people that act like they know what they're talking about, but really have no idea what they're talking about, just like every single other political commentator out there, you got it. We got so much politics to talk about, we're not even doing an intro. Politics, politics. Teapot Dome scandal, the XYZ affair, Watergate. We're covering all on tonight's Punk News podcast and more. Teapot Dome scandal. Weirdly, although a member of the president's cabinet was convicted for bribery, none of the fossil fuel companies and oil energy producers was convicted for paying a bribe. Do you think that is fair or not fair?
Not fair at all, but cash is king.
Well said. Halle Bullitt, Democrats, Republicans, Whigs, Tories, the Bull Moose Party. Am I right or am I right?
You are right.
Listen, I'll tell you, people, we are here to talk politics, and we're kicking it right off the politics of international, multinational mergers and acquisitions, because a long-favored bastion of independence, a long-favored icon of the power of art, a long-favored standard for how things should be done in the post-physical media era has been sold to an international company, and not just any international company, an international company with a lot of problems. And by problems, I mean things that we don't like, but things they don't give a shit about because they are making tons and tons and tons of money. And also, it is literally the first article to be paid to be posted by Auburn Paul in about 7 or 8 years. I'm not even kidding you. Auburn, like a ghost, appears from the darkness, does one post and disappears. And I mean, we've talked this before. No one's exactly sure what Auburn does. And I think Auburn, like, does some really high level, like money stuff. Like, I think Auburn, like, makes a lot of money. I don't know, though. But so he posted this. And so basically, Epic Games, the company behind Fortnite and the Unreal Engine, has purchased Bandcamp in full. And not only has Epic Games purchased Bandcamp in full, Epic Games is 40% of Epic Games is owned by Tencent, the Chinese company that has been routinely criticized for exploiting user data outside the context of the user agreement, which in of itself is extremely oppressive, but also for being susceptible to data breaches, but also for unfair business practice, and also for transferring American labor overseas after purchase of American companies. They also own 10% of Spotify, Tencent, that is. So a lot of people are surprised. I know I opened this page, and they even phrased it in – this is something that really bothers my – like, it really bothers my mom, it bothers me, but it seems to bother young people not as much as – nothing is written in its true fashion anymore. Like, there's so much lies by companies in that, like, back in the day, it would be like, Sears Roebuck has purchased Kmart. But now they posted Epic Games – Bandcamp has joined Epic Games. No, Bandcamp hasn't joined Epic Games. Epic Games bought Bandcamp. And I opened that up, and at first I thought they were like just doing some kind of collaboration, then I realized Epic Games bought Bandcamp, the best music site online, and honestly it felt like a punch in the gut, because I hope things work out. I've got a lot of concerns. I love Bandcamp, and more so, I love Bandcamp Daily, a section of Bandcamp that I write for. The editors over there are super fantastic, but I'm worried. I'm scared. Time and time and time again, giant companies have bought what were independent things, and they just kind of ruined them. One of the best examples is the AV Club. I used to read the AV Club every day, and then Univision bought it, and then someone else bought it. And now I never even go to AV Club because it's just I don't want to say it's terrible, but it's kind of terrible. But not only that, is like about 4 or 5 months ago, the new owners of the AV Club said, we're moving our offices to LA, so anyone in Chicago can keep your job, but you have to move to LA. So basically, no one kept their job. There's something that when, even though the guy that started Bandcamp, I'm sure he's got, you know, Silicon Valley investors, and I'm sure he did it for the money, there is something that when the guy or gal that creates something sells it to someone else, the magic 97 out of 100 times is lost. And I'm very scared here. Well, I mean, listen, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal, but it is symptomatic of a general problem that really is affecting the American way of life over the past 20 years or so. At any rate, when one of these big companies buys another cool thing, they almost always destroy it. And I'm concerned and I'm worried here that Bandcamp is going to be cool and it'll get a little worse and a little worse and a little worse and a lot worse. And something, it's just very frustrating. It feels that Spotify doesn't pay artists crap and no one cares, you know. Apple Music doesn't pay bands crap, you know, and no one cares. YouTube doesn't pay bands, you know. It was cool that we had this independent thing that kind of did focus on punk music, independent music, and bands could make money, and they did the cool Bandcamp Friday, and it kind of did feel like a club, honestly a giant club, but a cool thing where everyone was getting paid, and everyone was getting paid fairly. I know Bandcamp was making lots of money, which is fine with me, because the bands were making lots of money. And now that a company that is strictly an investment company, I mean, like, the purpose of Epic Games and even more so the purpose of Tencent isn't to do something cool. The purpose of Bandcamp is to make money and do something cool. The purpose of Tencent is an Epic, one purpose, make money. And that's kind of when things kind of get ruined and destroyed and the specialness is gone. And it's just frustrating in that, you know, over the past 20 years or so, it does feel like giant corporations control Congress, they control everything, and the consumer is more and more a product of in of himself or herself, and the quality of life is decreasing while the quality of life for, you know, less than 1% is rapidly increasing. And it feels like, I mean, here's another, well, I don't want to get too far off track, but my parents, their refrigerator of 40 years broke. I went with them and I bought them a new one. The new one broke in 2 weeks. You see, so it really does feel like, you know, if you study ancient history, there are eras. You know, the Old Kingdom in Egypt was a massively fruitful period. The Middle Kingdom was a kind of bad period, and then the Late Kingdom was actually kind of worse. Greek and Roman, the same. And I am very worried that I feel like we are decreasing and heading back down. I don't know, a dark age, but a grayer age than we were in previous decades. And I'm concerned, and I feel this is symptomatic of it. And it's just frustrating that we the consumers, along with this cool inventor, but we the consumers who supported Bandcamp, we kind of got something cool going, and a giant company comes along and says, I want to destroy it and take – well, I want to take it and ruin it all. And that's what might happen. And I love Bandcamp Daily. I've got at least one more article coming out. Ironically, the article coming out that I have on Bandcamp Daily is about anarchism. And quite sadly is all but the main Bandcamp Daily editors, they put all their social media on like silent because people were just harassing the shit out of them. And it's like, well, it's not them. They didn't make this call, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is a bummer. The other thing is nothing's going to happen. I mean, how many times, like when the LA Weekly got taken over by some creepy ultra conservative, like nothing, it's still, the LA Weekly is still there. Nothing ever, like, people, like, complain and cry, nothing ever happens, because, and the reason is because people got stuff to do, now more than ever, people have less free time, and frankly, that is how giant corporations, governments oppress people, by taking away people's free times and their ability to do things outside of the necessary things they have to do. Mm-hmm. But that all that being said, is nothing's going to happen. The bad guys win again. What might happen, much like AV Club, is the product might just get crappier and crappier until it collapses in on of itself, which happens a lot. But it's a bummer all around. I hate to start the podcast off with a bummer and a sourpuss thing, but listen, you want politics, you got it. Hallie Bullitt, Democrats, Republicans, Bull Moose, who are you voting for this time around?
I'm voting for this delicious, refreshing beverage that I'm drinking.
Oh, what kind?
Mango orange, sparkling, fantastic. That's got my vote.
You know what I had the past week? I had a Dr. Pepper for the first time in years. Those 23 flavors really are more than the sum of their parts. I mean, Dr. Pepper is tasty. I mean, it's very rich. And I mean, I only drink like one soda I drink like one soda a week, maybe every other week. But man, Dr. Pepper, I don't know what happened the past 7 or 8 years. Dr. Pepper got extremely tasty in the past 8 years.
I'm with you. It's a winning combination, right? I love Dr. Pepper. I read this email when it just arrived in my inbox, and I was like, I have no idea what this means. It doesn't sound good. And then I closed it and moved on with my day. And I'm so happy to know a little bit more now, John. You hear that something that you love that's small is getting bought by something that's big that you don't know anything about. And you immediately go, what's this going to be about? I mean, listen, I agree really 100% with everything you said. I guess what I hope is just that as long as they continue to let artists sell their stuff and make a decent amount of money selling their stuff that they deserve to make money on. Right. As long as that doesn't change, I think there's the potential for it to be totally fine. I mean, I don't know if, but I know what you're saying. Like, it's more than that, right? It's like, there is the Bandcamp Daily. There is, it's, you know, Bandcamp is kind of just like cool, and it's a tastemaker, and it's a great place to just, find out about more great music. And it just seems to be, it's really, really good at that. And that's the part that I worry, that it just won't be as cool, or they won't have the same staff, and it will lose something that way. As a platform where people are selling their music and their merchandise, yeah, let's just hope that it's gonna, in that area, it's gonna stay as cool as the people that are putting their music up on it. You know what I mean? Which is, I don't know. I hope it doesn't suck. I don't know what to say other than that. I just, like, I hope it doesn't suck. And do you hope it sucks now?
Oh, yeah.
Like, fuck corporate China. Let's burn this thing down to the ground.
Yeah, we start fresh. Raised earth. Yeah, this really surprised me, because it was like, well, what's going on? They just, like, extended Bandcamp Fridays, you know, like, really excited about that, and, like, all sorts of cool stuff. And, yeah, like, read Bandcamp Daily all the time, and it's awesome. And their roundups that they do, like, the, you know, like, this month in punk and all this kind of stuff, it's so cool, and you always find new stuff. And, you know, like, the spirit of it's so nice, and the layout's awesome, and the colors are great. Like, you know, you can listen to stuff for free before you buy it, you know, like, it's awesome. And, you know, I am skeptical and scared that that's going to go away, and that, like, your transactions aren't going to be as secure. And, you know, there's more uncertainty when there didn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, that's kind of the thing. I do want to know how much they bought it for, and I want to know why they sold it. I want answers.
The surprising thing, it was only $27.50. We should have bought it, you know, but the last Auburn Paul article was 6 years ago when he wrote Basement was touring with Turnstile.
Oh my God.
FYI. Yeah. So this sucks, man. It sucks. I'm bumped out. I mean, I agree that it could be okay, except for I hate the fact that Tencent now owns 40% of Bandcamp, a horrible multinational corporation that is just that has terrible human rights issues, terrible data issues, terrible all around. You know, I hate them. Well, I don't hate them, but well.
Yeah, it stinks because. Oh, sorry, I totally interrupted you.
Yeah, because I never interrupt anybody on the podcast. Go ahead.
It really does stink, because it was like Bandcamp was something you could feel virtuous about in a world where there's just like, it's like dwindling things that you can actually feel virtuous about, like where I could go on it and spend my money and feel like, ah, my money is going towards something good. It's not going through and going towards anything that I object to, anything nefarious. You know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah.
And there's right, John, and I think this is what you were getting to. There's just like fewer and fewer things that you can feel that way about anymore. That's a bad feeling.
You were absolutely right, and you expressed it better than I could. And we won't do on this forever, but like now that Tencent owns, like the Chinese government, not the Chinese people, the Chinese government is incredibly oppressive, and they are incredibly powerful on censorship. And it frustrates me to no end that American media censors itself in order to get distributed in China. It used to be that American movies were modified for the Chinese audience, which I don't really care about. But now China is insisting that American media and American sports only portray Chinese government in a certain way, or else they will refuse to distribute them at all. If you remember, about 2 years ago, there was a basketball player talking about how Tibet is being oppressed by the Chinese government, which is true, and he got in trouble from the NBA because China didn't want him to say that, you know? And so it is incredibly – and the Chinese government, as we know, has strong control over any Chinese corporation. And so there's a real nefarious, venomous threat there from the Chinese government that controls, if they want to control their own stuff, fine. I mean, I think it's bad, but whatever. I'm not responsible. But now that they're telling me what I can listen to in America, which really infuriates me. I mean, and it's all for the almighty dollar, and it is a true, and it, but also when you give money to Bandcamp now, you're giving money to them, you know, to help them oppress Chinese people, yeah. You know. So, I mean, it sucks, man. It sucks. I just heard
about that for the first time, that thing with like American movies and China, and it was like, it's just crazy that you just brought it up, because I feel like I just learned about this, whereas like their entire topics of movies that just like wouldn't get greenlighted by studios. Like I think the example that I heard was like, okay, like China's relationship to Taiwan, which like I've traveled in Taiwan, like I love Taiwan. That's like an incredible fucking place, and it like really, really kills me. Like that, I like Taiwan the way it is. I want it to be able to stay the way it is, and it upsets me that like China's gonna meddle with that. And so, sorry, I'm not being articulate, but I like if you were to try to get a movie made in which you are portraying anything about that situation with Taiwan and China, it just like a studio wouldn't make it. They just didn't want to make it, and that was like so shocking to me. I didn't realize that the China like puppet master sort of had that much power, really. You know, it's
scary, man. Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. And that drags out. But Hallie was also totally correct in that. Like, you can't, like, let's go back to my parents' fridge. So my parents bought a fridge. It doesn't work, right? So 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you go back to see, you say the fridge doesn't work. They're like, oh, we're bad. We'll give your money back. Whatever. Now they say you didn't read the fine print, so we had to have a one of the repair guys come out. But it's not even their repair guy; it's some third party. And he says it works, and it doesn't. So now I got to fight with that. I got to fight with all these people over a $400 fridge. The point being is, it used to be you go to the store, you buy something, it doesn't work, you bring it back. That's fine. Now I feel like I'm back in the Egyptian marketplace. Except for in the Egyptian marketplace, everyone's like, "Yeah, you got to watch out because not everyone tells the truth here." Except for here, they say we tell the truth, but they don't. It sucks. It's like everything's the Egyptian marketplace anymore. It's not the open and fair market that America is so proud of for the past 300 years. You know, mm-hmm. or 250 years. It sucks, man. It sucks. Mm-hmm. I hate it. Well, listen, you want politics, you got it. Now let's talk about something cool, because we're talking about more bummer stuff in it. This is going to be kind of a bummer podcast, people, but that's what politics, I mean, honestly, that's what politics is, and that's what Fox and CNN have recognized, that the more you upset the listener and tell the listener, here's something you need to be concerned about, the more people stay glued to the TV, and that's what they know. And I'm not some deep, I'm definitely not some deep conspiracy guy. If anything, I'm the exact opposite. But that being said, that is the science of 24-hour news, you know. So welcome to the Punk News Political Hour. You wanted it, you got it. But he's on that political, but political in a good way. No Bro, and more interviewed No Bro, and I got a new video out. And more, tell us about No Bro and the new video and your interview. How'd it go?
Yes, bro? Okay. Bro, my interview, it went really well. It was really fun. So I interviewed Catherine, and she's the lead vocalist and bassist, and she's awesome. The interview is great. I think so. Everyone should read it. If you haven't already read it, go read it.
Great interview. People will read it.
Woo! It's up on Punk News now. So yeah, we talk about, Live Your Truth, Shred Some Gnar, their new EP. We talk about hockey, because of course, and just like so much stuff. There's a lot of like fun facts, like, you know, you'll read it and you'll be like, wow, I didn't know that song was, recorded on shrooms. You know, it's really, really interesting. So go check it out if you haven't already. And yeah, so they, released their second EP, Live Your Truth, Shred Some Gnar, on February 23rd. And they released, a video for Eat, Slay, Chardonnay on the same day. So, like the song is really, really good. There's lots of tambourine. There's lots of cowbell. Like, it's really punky. It's really fast. It's short. Like, you can just listen to it like over and over again. And it, like, it's catchy as all hell. The chorus is like, is Eat, Slay, Chardonnay, and it's done in such a way that you just, like, you want to yell it. Like, even if you're just, like, listening to it, like, you just want to yell it at your computer or wherever, you know, you're listening to it. So, like, it's really cool, and it's going to be absolutely insane live, like, absolutely insane. So the video, they're on, I think it's a tennis course. They're on an outdoor court, and they're playing the song, and again, their energy is awesome. They're very, they're just like kicking ass. They're shredding some gnar, if you will. it's great. And then at the end, Catherine flips off the camera and it's perfect. So what did you guys think of Nobro?
I loved it. I played this song on the podcast last week. Now I'm like, oh, I should have waited. I love it. I just think this band is so appealing to me. It's just very, very fucking punk. It's very punk in all the things that I love about punk. Like it feels like rebellious and fun and like slightly out of control and like empowering. I just like this band so much. I like what they do. I like who they are. I like what they are putting out into the world. And yeah, I'm super into it. John, had you? Well, never mind. That's not an interesting question. John, what did you think?
What were you going to ask me that wasn't an interesting question?
it was like it had to do with the timeline of like when you heard it. It was truly not interesting. There's a reason that I didn't ask you it. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I think Nobro is cool. I think Nobro is real cool. And not only is it an M Moore band, I feel like more and more M Moore is honing her M Moore band selection. And I like more and more M Moore bands. Where it used to be maybe I was into like 50% of M Moore bands. Now I'm into like 75% of M Moore bands. And I think Nobro is a real winner. I think I like how this song is only like a minute 45 seconds and it's pretty much a straight up punk basher. But I like how they apply sort of a 70s rock atmosphere to a degree. Like almost like a Cheap Trick atmosphere. Cheap Trick meets like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say Led Zeppelin. Cheap Trick meets almost like Motorhead, but a little bit lighter to a punk style, and I dig it a lot. I think a lot of the songs that we've heard have had sort of a similar high energy vibe, which I've dug. I hope for their album, when it does come out, I hope they have a little bit more variety, and that's not a criticism of this, because your first few singles and EPs for many great bands, they're kind of the same vibe. The Adverts, the Sex Pistols only had one ad. The Clash, the Adverts, Rudimentary Peni, Circle Jerks, you know, all those bands, their first few strikes were somewhat similar, had a similar vibe to establish the identity of the band. I am saying at this point, I feel Nobro has established the identity of the band, and I hope that the first album, yes, here's what I'm saying. Well, I'll just come out and say it. The band Sheer Mag, cool band. I feel as though they lost a lot of momentum when they put out their first album, because the first album was just the singles done again. Different songs, but same song, essentially. And I feel that's kind of where the band kind of fell off. And that's, they had so much thunder and it kind of dissipated when they put out the first album. And that, a lot of bands, Sheer Mag is far from the only band. A lot of bands do that. Another example would be the band with the guy that everybody hates them, but they all love for a minute.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Dude, shit.
He would wear the 70s tuxedos.
Yeah. He used to be in Weston.
Yeah, that guy. Everyone is.
Beachlang. Beachlang.
Oh. Yeah,
same exact thing for Beachlang. And so I hope that they are able to expand the universe on the first album. I think they will, so I'm excited. Here's another bummer story. Well, actually, the Nobro story is a cool story. The band's got the style. They got the songs. They got the magic. All they got to do is capitalize on, and I think they will. So I'm very excited about Nobro. Here's a bummer, though. But although it is slightly more complex than it might appear at face value, Neighborhood Brats have dropped off their tour with Pairs. The reason they dropped off their tour with Pairs, it was people were surprised at first. So the band put out a statement saying, well, I'll just read the first statement, then the second statement. Here are excerpts from the first statement. With great sadness, we are leaving our tour with Pairs. For the past several months, we have been bullied and harassed online, and out of safety and respect to Pairs, we have decided our presence would be a distraction while we deal with this ongoing issue. Blah, blah, blah. It's sad. a lot of people were calling them crybabies, and in some sections of punk that are not proud boys, but kind of proud boys, but not really proud boys, but kind of on the same vibe. They were like, you know, a bunch of pussies, blah, 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 you know. So then Neighborhood Brats released a second statement that kind of gave more detail. Here's the second statement in full. Before clarifying our previous statement regarding leaving tour, we would like to thank blah blah. Thanks everyone. Over the past 6 years, our bass player has regularly been harassed and doxxed online by an unknown entity using a fake Instagram profile. The subject is a compromising photo taken when he was a teenager, likely under 18, showing an inappropriate tattoo that no longer exists. The unknown entity for spreading this image to promoters, fans, friends, and members of our team is doing this with the sole intention of harm. For months, Instagram was unresponsive in our attempts to report and shut down the account, and we are assessing any and all available recourse. Our bass player is one of the nicest, sweetest, gentle, and kind human beings we ever had met. It baffles us to why anyone would want to hurt him. We apologize to any friends, fans, and promoters who were victimized by this troll. For more information on doxing, go to this doxing website. So a couple of things is, A, was it, I guess, proper for the band to drop off the tour? B, what is it like to get harassed and or receive a death threat online? And C, what could the tattoo possibly be that someone could kind of blackmail or extort you with from several years ago? And I've got it seems like no one really knows, but there are guesses out there, and you can probably do the mental work as to what that might be, know? Happy Bullet, what's your perspective? You've been on tour. You've probably been harassed by people while being in a band, right? Not really.
Although I have somebody that's making, like, fake Instagram and Facebook accounts in my name right now. So
creepy.
That's been an interesting development. I tell you, having really only the information that they, you know, that you basically just read, I guess my first reaction was, wow, like, it makes me sad that we live in a world that can be so unforgiving of people's past missteps that this bass player doesn't feel that they can just put the fucking photo up on social media and be like, yeah, look at this. I used to have this. It fucking sucked. I got it removed. This is not the person that I am anymore. I'm so sorry. That they're so worried that no one would be able to accept that apology and just move on, you know? And I guess I don't really know what it is. And maybe there are some things that are so harmful that people just can't move on from them. But I don't know. There's something about it stuck with me. Like, you know, that whatever this is, it holds such power, you know, whatever this secret is that it's able to, you know, that this online troll is able to sort of torment this individual and then also this band. And then now this tour is affected. It just, it would depend on what it was and who it was hurting. But that was my initial thought. I wish we lived in a world where this bass player, instead of always, continually being in a position where someone can blackmail them, I just wish that they could just say, look, this is what the thing is. I'm not letting somebody harass me with this anymore. I'll just tell you, this is what it was, and this is why, and this is the person that I am today. And, like, can y'all just forgive me, and can we just play music and fucking move on with our lives? You know what I mean? That was how it hit me in the gut. I don't know. What was your guys' reaction?
Here's my take. I think generally anything someone says, you can do a lot of bad things before, but if someone just says something dumb before they're 18, I kind of think like a contract, you can void a contract when you turn 18. I kind of think you get a free pass from, young kids, they're stupid. And plus, you don't know someone's back. Like, I don't know what the tattoo is, but let's, for the sake of the argument, say that tattoo was, you know, a swastika, but I don't know what it is, but let's say it was. You know, maybe he's got a racist dad. You don't know. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
What really, kudos to the person that does dumb stuff before they're 18, and when they turn 18, instead of kind of, you know, sweeping it under the rug, say, I screwed up, or, you know, I was 18, I'm not that way now. Kudos to that person, you know? And so I think we definitely need to – I think the punk community, that is, if you were at a show and you explain the situation, most people say, like, yeah, dude, what, before 18, who cares, you know? However, online, as our commenters showing, actually, I'm going to, well, should I go off on the commenters again, or are you guys sick of hearing my spiels about the comments?
No, I mean, I'm curious. I didn't read the comments. Actually, I'm curious to know how they responded.
So the commenters, for some reason, the internet gives a very minority of people an extremely strong hand that seems to control reality. And I'll give you two examples. If you go to Punk News, everyone hates Leftover Crack. Leftover Crack is the worst band in the world, and everyone hates them. At Punk Rock Bowling, 20,000 people disagreed strongly. You know what I mean? So it just goes to show you that the internet commenters are not accurate as to what the majority of people actually believe. Another example, we've got a bunch of new writers trying out. Some of them are ESL. Some of them are young. One person did a review. It's the first time they ever did. I CC them more. They're trying. They have done reviews before. And they just got savaged by 20 assholes online. And it's awful. It's like it's the first review this guy's ever done, or girl. I don't know if it's a guy or a girl, I forget. But at least that person is trying. You're not doing anything. You're just sitting there criticizing, you know.
Yeah.
But the person saying, you know, they're like, John, I'm getting bummed out. I shouldn't have tried. I'm not good enough. And I was like, no, don't let those pricks tell you what to do. They're not doing anything. Keep swinging. I'll step in there with you and fight in the cage with you, you know. And so the point is, creeps online control what people do in real life, when in reality the creeps online are the small minority and really don't do anything. And so I think that's what's happening here, in that, like, some creep online is being creepy, and that false power appears as a real power in real life, when really it isn't, you know. But that being said, is no matter – like, you could be totally in the right. Here's an example. COVID is killing people. We should do something about COVID killing people. How many millions of people said, no, COVID doesn't exist. You should go out without a mask during the height of COVID. You know, it just goes to show there's always going to be creeps online. And it's reality, and it sucks, and that's how it is. The point being is, I think whatever neighborhood brats has to do with you. I mean, I've gotten death threats online, and it sucks, man. It sucks, you know, because when you get a death threat, you know, you're pretty sure that person's not going to do anything, but maybe that one whack job will, you know, and that does happen. 1 out of 1,000 times. But that being said, maybe you'll be the 1 out of 1,000 times. So getting a death threat or an extortion, it's a bummer. So people are criticizing neighborhood brats. It's like, you know what? You've never been in that scenario before, and you're just some keyboard cowboy jackass. And I hate those guys. Well, I don't hate them, but I really dislike them. And so the point being is, I think...
Yeah, and they're, like, probably that weren't people that weren't even going to go to the show to begin with. So, like, what's it matter? What do they care if this band drop? I'm with you. Why do people have to voice such arbitrary and always negative opinions about things that you know they don't actually give a shit about?
I know exactly why 99.99% of the time. Do you know why?
Tell me.
They are people that have never done anything significant in their entire life. They are people that have never tried in their entire life. And therefore, by waxing this power, it gives them some sort of courage or power of, I've done something, you know. You don't see Jello Biafra out there commenting on this, you know. You don't see Dick Lucas commenting on this. You don't see the guys from Pup or the Downtown Boys, like, you know, because they're doing cool shit, you know. And so it's people that have never done anything that try to control people that are trying. And that's one of the effects of the internet, and I don't know how to stop it except for to say, everyone that's not an online creep, let's just not pay any attention to them. But for some reason, that seems to be very hard to do.
I have a rule for myself. Have I told you guys this? Because I don't really comment on anything. Occasionally, I'll leave a review about something that I bought because I think it'd be helpful to other people. But I have a rule for myself that I'm not allowed to leave. For every negative review I post, I have to post a positive review of something else. Because that seems fair to me. You know what I mean?
Balance.
You can't just use the internet as a place to put all your bad feelings. Or I guess you can, but, like, I don't want to live in that world. So I try not to be a person that's, like, promoting that world, you know?
Yeah. A good rule. One thing that I will add is, the tattoo that I imagine this person having, that I don't know that this person has, but the tattoo that I imagine them having, the type of person that would be negative against, I think there are people of that of that background in the band. So what's the problem? You know what I mean? Let's say someone had an I Hate John tattoo when I was in a band with them. You know, well, it's like, well, you can't complain about his I Hate John tattoo because John's in the band. You know what I mean? So.
But also, I mean, I have books on the history of punk that have pictures of fucking Debbie Harry running around in an armband with a swastika on it. There was like a bunch of that Bowery crew that thought that was like real cute or something back in the day. And again, they were like young and they were idiots. And I don't know, they're probably high on like a million different substances. And so I'm not, you know, like we don't boycott, to my knowledge. I don't think anyone boycotts Debbie Harry because of that. It's like we look at it and we go, well, that was fucked up and ignorant. And like, I'm glad that these people grew up and got their shit together and learned to like not be insensitive fucking dickheads, you know? But like I wish that people that had like made mistakes like that when they were younger felt that that kind of understanding was going to be, that they were going to be met with that. And not just total hostility. Although, this is not to say that I don't understand why someone would be hostile. And again, we don't know that this was a swastika, but say it was. You know, it's like, I get why that would make people feel hostile. But I don't know. Right, we're all talking about this as a culture. Like, you know, we want people to be accountable. We do, and it's important. And it's important that people think about the things that they say and put that out there into the world, and that they're not doing harm. It's really important. But like, you know, also as a culture, I think we're trying to figure out like where is this balance, though, right? Because we can't just like never forgive people for fucking up. It's just not. That's also not the world I want to live in, you know?
I thought Hallie was going to say, I, too, also have a bunch of Nordic rune tattoos. Hallie does not have a bunch of Nordic rune tattoos, FYI. Right, Hallie?
I do have two terrible tattoos, but the only thing, they're only offensive in that they're dumb. They're only offensive in that they're just totally fucking D-U-M-B, but I don't think they would actually, they might hurt someone's like artistic sensibilities, or it might hurt their opinion of me being a cool person. They're not going to cause any more damage than that.
That was one of the two dumb tattoos, and we leave the second to be revealed later on.
Okay, so this is the one I think I might just have to get covered up. So I have a tattoo of a monster on my ankle. It's a monster. He has his, like a big mouth, and he has like little ears, and he has like a big tongue sticking out of his mouth, and he's got his arms crossed, and he has an expression on his face that kind of looks like, heh, heh, heh. And clearly the tattoo artist that I got to do it was highly influenced by the art of Ren and Stimpy, because it definitely just looks like a side character from like Ren and Stimpy. Like, you're looking at it and you're like, it's not Ren or Stimpy, but like it was probably one of their pals. This is such a terrible tattoo. And this is the thing that's so horrifying about it. So I'm hanging out with Brian Gorsinger from Nightbirds and his wife. And she takes one look at it and she goes, wait, does that thing have an erection? I guess because I'm so old, it's started to bleed. And so like this place where the monster tongue is sticking out, and the fact that his mouth is so long, it now just looks like maybe has a very long neck and torso and just like a big old heart on. And so it's just like, it's so bad, you guys. And like, I really think that it's just going to cost me so much money to have it covered up. I think I just like have to, because I'm a grown adult. I can't just be walking around with this piece of shit on my leg anymore.
Good answer. Good answer. So here's something that is also divisive, like Hallie's tattoo. Pup have released a new video. It's for the song Matilda. The video was directed by Jefferson Dutton, and it's off their upcoming album, The Unraveling of Pup the Band, out April 1 on Rise Records. and more. What do you think of this track and the video?
I really like Pup. Pup has been one of my favorite bands for a really, really long time. I don't know. I like this a lot better than Robot Writes a Love Song. Like, you know, you hear this and you're like, yep, that's Pup. And, you know, it's like it's familiar, but it's different. And it's really good. But I don't know. There's a block there. There's something that's stopping me from actually, like, enjoying the music. And I don't know what exactly it is. I don't know what it is. But the video was really cool. I like the video. So it's like, you know, it shows a guy with a guitar and, you know, playing it and having a good time and then pawns it. And lots of people come in and try to, you know, pawn other stuff for the guitar. And it's not until, like, a younger person comes in and picks it up and, like, really loves the guitar that, you know, like, they get the guitar and, you know, everyone's happy and the pawn shop lights start flickering and the owner's like, hey, it's happening again and all this. And it's a really, really nice video. The shop owner is played by Mike Mitchell of, Doughboys, the food podcast. So I thought that was really cool. Cause I know, like, Pop has tweeted about them and I think they're friends and stuff. And it's really, really cool. And yeah, the song is about Stefan's old guitar and how, like, it meant so much and then just kind of, you know, kind of rotted. So, yeah. Like, it feels like Pup were so, or it's hard because Pup, like, means so much to me, and, you know, I've seen them live a lot, and they're great, and this, I'm having a lot of trouble getting excited about it, and it feels like they're moving beyond my grip somehow, like, if that makes sense. But anyway, yeah, Hallie, what did you think of Matilda?
Like, the first thing I have to say is how cute it was that it was clearly so hard for you not to be able to say that you loved this. Like, I could feel how much you liked Pup and how much it pained you to have to say anything less than that you absolutely loved it. I mean, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I liked this song, and I love Pup. I think maybe, right? It just sort of felt like ideas that Pup has sort of done better in other songs, sort of recycled, right? Maybe?
Yeah.
Is that kind of what it felt like to you?
Kind of.
Yeah, sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, it's kind of like Mabu. Like, they did that so well, you mm-hmm. know? And then mm-hmm. this feels like part two.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, I liked the song. I just didn't it was one of those things where as I was listening to it, I was like, oh, I like this. And also, I'll probably never listen to it again. You know what I mean? It sort of yeah. felt like something that I can just enjoy once and I don't have to revisit it. The video, I will say, the video kind of like gave me chills and then made me cry. And I was like, okay, this video is amazing. I just loved the story of this guitar. Like, I liked that the guitar was the main character in this video, you know, and sort of this moment. I also just love pawn shops, and I love that this video was also sort of like it was like an ode to sort of the oddness and quirkiness and sort of romanticism of what a pawn shop is, right? You know, people sort of trading in things that once meant so much to them and that they just either don't have a use for anymore or that they need money so badly that they have to get rid of it. So I found like that whole part of the video to be pretty captivating. And just the moment when this young person finds this guitar and like holds it in their hands for the first time, like I really just started tearing up. It's like that I felt like the video captured something about that moment of a young person finding a musical instrument, and you just get this sense that it's going to open up some big adventure in their lives, you know, or that it's going to, you know, it's someone holding for the first time something that's really going to change them. And I thought the video just like nailed that in such a way that I found so moving. And I just also like the cleverness of how, like, you do see Pup playing the song, but they're, the band's performance is seen on the screens of the old TVs and other devices with screens that are in the pawn shop. So you're always seeing them within the context of the pawn shop. And I thought the video was so well done and, like, so fucking cool and clever. And I'll stop talking about it now, but I obviously loved it. John, what did you think?
did somebody say something?
Sorry, I'm very chatty. Sorry, I was in the car a lot today, so I'm very chatty right now.
What band were we talking about?
It was Flock of Seagulls. It was Rudimentary Peni. It was. I'm trying to think of. It was Men at Work, John.
Great band. I don't know how I felt talking about that band. But listen, here's another person that I'm always sort of talking about. KRS-One has put out a new album. The new album is called IMAMCRU12. Most of the album is produced by his son, DJ Sun One. And the album has a couple of songs that have been around for a couple of years, including Knock 'Em Out the Box. It's a relatively short album. It's only about 40 minutes. Actually, it's 50 minutes. That's not that short. It follows a string of albums by KRS from the past few years. This one is kind of, I won't say unique, but this one is notable because the beats are relatively sparse and simple, unlike the past few, which have been, I guess, more complex and varied beats, but honestly not that thrilling overall. The beats, I think, are good, not great, but I will say KRS, lyrically, he is back in top form. I'm real excited to see him live again. I think his album is very good. He's put out literally like 30 albums. I don't think this is one of his best ones, but I think it's real good, and it's got a lot. Next week, we're actually going to talk about his video where he dances and talking about all the different dances from hip-hop, so that'll be kind of cool. But I will say I think KRS is is probably the best MC ever, and he's one of the most prolific MCs ever, and he's definitely the best live MC ever, and I just think it's cool how he just keeps pounding out the albums. This one is real good. He put out one about 2 years ago called the Block Party Mixtape, which is one of the best things he's ever done, which is probably the craziest 20 minutes I've heard in a long time, hip-hop wise. That being said, I love how KRS is maintaining kind of the old school style of MCing and beats as opposed to the new stuff, which is kind of, generally speaking, kind of more low. Like, he's very high energy, very blunt, very blocky, very boom, bat, boom, bat, boom, bat, which I love. I think this album is cool, and I just think it's cool how KRS is not wavering in his mission and still putting out pretty cool stuff. Halliam, I don't know if you guys got any perspective on it. If not, that's fine. Or if you have a perspective on MC KRS-One, do tell.
I mean, no, it made me feel better because you kind of said, you know, I don't listen to a lot of hip hop, but you said exactly what I thought listening to it, which was that his lyrics and his performance were completely astounding and that I was really underwhelmed with just the actual, like, music and the tracks. His voice and his delivery to me was like enough to make it like interesting to listen to and like pretty compelling. I did want to ask you though, I mean, without asking you to go on too much of a tangent, what is the deal with hip hop and rap? And I mean, right, this is probably like a whole history lesson you would have to give me, but like, what is the deal with people needing to put down other artists and be like, oh, this other hip hop is fake and I'm the one doing the real hip hop? Like, why is that such a common thing? Like, you know, like, punks, we love to say that to one another, but there's not a lot of people like writing entire songs about how all the other punks are fake and they're the real punks. It's just not something that we would like bother to. Well, I can't think of another genre. I mean, maybe I'm just not thinking of it, but like, I can't think of another genre where this is like such a common thing to do, to just like shit on other artists making music and declare yourself like the real deal, right?
Yeah, you know, great point. I never really thought about that perspective that you just mentioned, that hip hop is kind of the only music genre where the artists diss other art. Like, there definitely are punk diss tracks. You know, there's London Boys by Johnny Thunders, which disses Sex Pistols, which disses New York Dolls by the Sex Pistols. So there are, and there's a lot of Clash diss tracks. Chumbawamba wrote the first Clash diss track. Crass diss Chumbawamba a lot. So there is some of that, but not nearly as much. I would say it's two, maybe three things. Firstly, I would say that just by the nature of hip hop, you can put a lot more words in your song, so it's easier to talk about whatever you want to talk about, you know. Second, I would say that hip hop, and this is me just, you know, blowing hot air. I'm not a socio-political academic kind of person, but I would say hip hop comes from, hip hop comes from the inner city, specifically the low income inner city. So that is a very competitive atmosphere because there's only so much money to go around in the center of Chicago. There's only so much money to go around in Brooklyn at the time, or Bronx at the time, late 70s, mid 70s, you know? So just by the very nature, it's competitive because only one guy out of 10 is going to make money, so that I better be the best, you know? Whereas maybe in punk, maybe even though, I mean, a lot of, actually though, if we look at the early West Coast punk, a lot of those guys, didn't, like, you know, Darby Crash didn't come from money. Circle Jerks didn't come from money. But you're right, it wasn't as competitive. I guess because maybe because it's easier to start, and, like, to rap, all you need is a mouth. To start a band, you need a lot of things. So when the concept of MCing started, there was way more MCs, because to be an MC, you just have to say, I'm an MC. Whereas to be in a band, you have to get a guitar and a bass. And so because there's more MCs, it's more competitive. Possibly. But also, I mean, hip-hop started out as a party function where people were having fun at a party. So there would be DJ battles and that kind of, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think
the DJ battles thing is, like, yeah, probably, like, a big.
But also, the other thing that I would say, and true, there have been, well, if you listen to the early stuff, there were DJ battles, but the concept of beef didn't really, you can make a very strong argument that KRS-One started the concept of hip-hop beef. Because when he was a young guy coming up, on record that is, there's probably, well, actually that's not true either, because, well, so one of the most famous aspects of hip-hop is when Kool Moe Dee and Busy Bee battled. And Busy Bee at the time was known as the greatest MC of all time, and he's what they call a party MC, which is, you know, if you're making money, put your hand in the air and wave them around like you just don't care. Let me hear you say, hey, and the crowd yells. Where Kool Moe Dee was the first, or one of the first, you could say, boom bap rappers, where he doesn't interact with the crowd. He just goes, you know, boom bap, boom bap. Like, he's just, like, speeding forward. He's not hyping the crowd. He's hyping himself. And so there's a very famous show where it was Kool Moe Dee and Busy Bee battling for the best hip hop guy, and everyone thought Busy Bee was going to win because he had been the best for the year and everyone loved him. And Kool Moe Dee comes out and did a new style, like the Run DMC style, boom bap, boom bap, and he blew Busy Bee out of the water, according to the judges in the crowd, you know. And so since then, hip hop has had that beef undercurrent, even though those two guys actually kind of like each other. It wasn't a real beef. The serious beef you can apply on record, apply to KRS-One, because, and here's how it started. KRS-One, when he was 17, went to the Mr. Magic radio show and he said, play my tape on the radio. And Mr. Magic told him to get lost. And at the time, like, it'd be weird to just walk into a radio station and play my tape, but that really made KRS-One mad. Mr. Magic was associated with the Juice Crew, which is MC Shan, Biz Markie, Roxanne Shanté, and producer, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name, the very famous producer that did all those tracks. I'll look it up in a second. At any rate, so there was a song called The Bridge, which is, we're talking about how hip-hop came from Queensbridge. So KRS-One did a song called The Bridge Is Over, arguably the first true beef track, where he just, like, attacked that song and the whole Juice Crew, and basically, I mean, to a degree, kind of ended all their careers in that Marley Marl is the producer. Like, Marley Marl was the Dr. Dre of the East Coast until The Bridge Is Over by KRS-One. And he basically annihilated them. And then, no, I got it backwards. He did South Bronx. They did The Bridge. He did South Bronx. They did another diss track. And then KRS-One did The Bridge Is Over. And basically, I don't say ended Marley Marl's career, but it kind of ended Marley Marl's career, and that's kind of what the first really big hip-hop beef. So you could say KRS-One is really the first true beef rapper, and you could say that's not cool, except for he's so good at it, and he destroyed Nelly, he destroyed Marley Marl, he destroyed MC Shan. Like he is the most dangerous, he really is the most dangerous MC. And I think he's frustrated now, in that hip-hop used to be an underground, and I can't speak for the black community, I'm not black. But I believe KRS-One feels as though black people invented hip-hop, which everyone, they did, but now it has been mass commercialized and non-black people get the majority of hip-hop dollars, you see. And there's a lot of MCs now, or not, KRS-One would call them rappers, guys that are like guns, hoes, sex, I get blowjobs, I tell my bitch this, but like there's no substance in there. And not that KRS is against gangsterism in of itself, but he's against gangsterism for the mere sake of gangsterism. And I think KRS-One would make the argument it's not black people that are choosing to do that. It's the money makers that are saying this is what sells, so this is what we're going to have our artists do. And these are the kind of artists we will promote rather than artists that have a deeper cultural influence, you see. And so I think KRS-One attacking those rappers is he holds hip-hop to be very dear. So by attacking those rappers, he's saying you have taken something special and perverted it and made it just another product or even worse, and you are harming the hip-hop culture, which the KRS-One is a culture just like punk is a culture, just like whatever. You know, it's not just music, it's a culture. So I think KRS-One is saying, I am the true hip-hop guy, and you guys need to be kind of put in your place because you're perverting something that's special. That's my understanding. I'm not black, I'm not a rapper, I'm not KRS-One, but that's my perception from the outside looking in.
Thank you for that. No, that was like, yeah, that was really interesting.
So anyway, if you are KRS-One and you want to write in, then let us know. Please do. I interviewed KRS-One once, very briefly. This, I'll tell you a quick story, then we'll play a song. So when I first started getting paid to write music, I wrote to the San Jose Mercury News, and I said, KRS-One's going to be in town. Do you want an interview with him? And at the time, I didn't know that you couldn't just get an interview with anybody, you know? And the editor there was Pamela Morton, who was so cool. She's like, oh, we don't really have any open space, but thanks for reaching out. I said, okay. And then a day later, I get a call on my cell phone. She's like, this is Pamela Moreland. Did you still want to write about KRS-One? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, great, because our classical guy fell over two what do you call it? You put the money in where you park. Our classical guy fell over two parking meters and broke both his legs. So I can't write to him. So do you want to? So we don't have time to do a KRS-One interview, but do you want to do a live show review? I said, sure. So I went to the show, and it was amazing. It was absolutely, it was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. And then afterwards, I hustled my way backstage, and I said, KRS, you want to do an interview? Because I didn't know that's not how you're supposed to do interviews. And there's like 30 people there, and honestly, there's like a lot of really corny, like, MC guys that like are doing like super quote cultural rap, like KRS, check out my raps, you know, and they just do all these really cheesy raps, and he's sitting there kind of king of, you know, he's definitely enjoying being like the king, you know. But KRS, when you want to do an interview, so we did like a 3-question interview, and people were laughing at me, but he was answering my questions seriously, and he said, email me the rest of your questions, and I emailed him, he never answered me back. But honestly, KRS is the man, because he and I connected over those 3 questions, and he, I actually have spoken to him very briefly since then. He is out of this world in all respects. Like, he is something else. He is not quite a Lee Perry, but he's real close, you know?
No.
So that's John's story of hustling his way backstage at the KRS-One show. Don't ask me how honestly, if I tried to do that today, I don't think I could do it. Like somehow, like, when you don't know the rules, you get, like, special powers, and you can just do whatever you want. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know the rules, so I just did it, you know? But if I tried to do that today, I don't think I'd be able to do it, you know?
I'm so sorry. I don't know if you can hear that. My computer started making noise. I'm so sorry.
All right. We're going real long. Listen, Em and Hannah, you guys want to kick it for another half hour or so? I'm feeling good, but we've got a lot more stories to cover. You guys want to keep rolling, or what do you guys want to do?
I feel good, and I can also, you know, I can be like a slightly more disciplined editor of
Listen. If there's one thing that we don't do, we don't edit, and we don't hold back. So we're going to play a song. We'll come back, and we'll talk about more politics. And play a song.
Oh, okay. Let's see. So, we're going to do Not Myself by Nobro, and it features Tara Lightfoot. You can read more about that in my interview. Yeah.
And we are back. What was interesting about Em's interview is someone put, great interview, Em. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, Em's bringing in new people. But then the person was, like, totally trolling, like, and being, like, a total, you know, Proud Boy-ish. I'm like, who is this person? You know, anyways, listen, don't read the comments. Don't ever read the comments. Listen, check this out. So Russia's invading Ukraine. It's totally lame. And the weird thing is some people, like, I don't even, what's the politics podcast? It's so weird how some people were like, I love America. I hate Biden. He's trying to destroy America. I love Trump because I love America. And now they're like, go Russia. It's like, go Russia. Like, what? It's like one of our two biggest enemies. Like you don't even know what you stand for, which is infuriating. Like, I can respect someone that has a backbone and believes in something. But so many people, even people in the punk scene, don't believe in anything. And they're so easily led by asinine ideas. You know, it frustrates me. A lot of things frustrate me. The world frustrates me.
People that are like, oh, I won't fucking, you can't even tell me to, like, wear, like, a fucking mask because freedom is so important to me. But I fucking love Russia, man. Yeah. Russia is all about freedom, right? Like, I mean, it's just, it's baffling. It's baffling.
I think I texted, we're going off the tangent, I don't care, we're going to talk about politics. I texted Hallie a couple weeks ago. I said, Hallie, I probably shouldn't say this. I said, Hallie, I just can't stay mad at Rob Miller because the Meebix is so good. Did I text that to you, or did I think about texting that to you and I didn't text that to you?
I think you thought about texting that to me. I do not remember actually. But so anyways, it's like you're texting it to me now with your...
With my mouth.
With your mouth. Why does that sound gross? It's like.
Well, speaking of gross, Rob Miller went off the deep end and said some not cool stuff, and it's really unclear what his stance was. But I just can't stay mad at. And he even kind of dissed me a little bit, but not mega. And I just can't. Like, I can't say. Like, if he straight up said John's an ass, then I could write him off. But because he was only subtly dissing me, I'm like, you know, he's made such great music. And great musicians sometimes go off the deep end, and that you know, sometimes you fly too close to the sun. The reason I'm saying this is the big thing about, you know, Rob, about that whole faction of people like, you know, no one can tell me what to believe or what to do, so I'm going to do everything this one guy tells me to believe in, you know? And so, that was kind of the Trump, it's like, I'm an independent American, so I'm going to do everything Trump tells me to do and believe everything he says. You know, it's like, what? Anyways, the only reason I bring it up is because I saw some punks that I know were, quote punk, not really punk, like kind of dissing on like people like opposing Russia and you know, like basically saying Russia's cool. I'm like, who are you? You know, it really bummed me out. Anyways, the Coat Hangers rule and Sick of It All is cool, and they're both doing cool things. The Coat Hangers, a band I absolutely love. Side fact, Julia, singer and guitar player of the Coat Hangers, is Belarusian, and she's a Belarusian refugee, and of course, Belarus has been attacked and by Russia before, so this is probably quite personal to her. I actually interviewed her about this a while ago, and she's got a whole interesting story about how she's a refugee from Belarus because the Russian people were locking people up and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so I'm sure this is very important to her. Coat Hangers and You'll Know Us by Trail of the Dead have recorded a cover of Pussy Riot's Putin Lights Up the Fires. All sales of the digital single goes to Cares for Ukraine Crisis Fund. The track is awesome. Meanwhile, Pete and Lou Collar of Sick of It All have released a track called God Save Ukraine, which is a twisting of God Save the Queen. One commenter said, well, I think this is stupid because God Save the Queen is anti the Queen and God Save Ukraine is pro-Ukraine. And at first I'm like, well, that is kind of lame that they took a song that's supposed to be an attack and have switched the title to being something positive. But then I thought, no, that's actually, like, really awesome. Like, the way that they would kind of take another work, dissect it, and flip it around and rework it makes it, like, totally cool. And the song sounds pretty good. I'm not a huge Sick of It All fan, but I think this cover is real cool, and I dig it. And I think the Coat Hangers song is real awesome. And more. Both Sick of It All and Coat Hangers. Do you think this is cool? And some people have criticized Coat Hangers and Sick of It All, and other people saying, well, you're not really doing anything. You're just raising money for the Ukrainians. And I'm like, well, as Jello Biafra says, doing something beats doing nothing every day of the week. And most people are doing nothing. Emma, what's your stance?
I'm all for both of these. I think it's great. Because, you know, like the That's such like a weak argument. Like, oh, all you're doing is raising money. Yeah, that money buys medical kits. It buys food. It helps people. Like, it's not just like sitting in a vault somewhere. It's active and moving. And I think anything that, like anyone can do in like a situation like this where we're so far removed and we feel, or, you know, like you want to help, but you feel helpless. Like, you know, like something like this is perfect because it's getting, it's getting supplies on the ground. It's getting help to the Ukrainian people who need it, and doing it with something that people will buy, like music, and listen to, and share. You know, I think that's great. Like, that's what I think is really great about the sick of it all, like the God Save Ukraine thing. Everyone knows God Save the Queen. Everyone knows that song. Everyone knows like how it goes. So when you hear like this twist on it, like it gets stuck in your head. You know the song, and all you have to do is really just substitute the lyrics, and then there you go. Like, it's good. And more people will again share that and get more money. One thing with that too that I thought was really interesting, at the end of the song, there is a part in Ukrainian, and that is a symbol of Ukrainian sovereignty and resistance, and is also the official salute of the armed forces of Ukraine. And it translates to "Glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes." So I think that's pretty fitting. And the coat hangers are awesome. I love the coat hangers. And you'll notice by the Trail of the Dead, their song "Putin lights up the fires." Really, really great cover. They did such a good job, and I'm really glad that they translated it. And they're singing in English, because, you know, that way it's like, there you go. It's right there. You know, you can see it. You can hear it. It's about what's going on. It was written years ago, but it's more relevant, or just as relevant, if not more so, now. So all in favor. I think we're going to see more of this. I think we're going to see more bands and people put benefit music out for Ukraine, and it's great that they're taking a stand and they're standing on the right side.
Yeah, I liked the Pussy Riot cover was amazing, right? I was like, damn, why didn't I already know this song? That song's like really, really good. Am I missing like a? I found that to be such like an odd and interesting team up, right? Like coat hangers. And
yeah, weird.
Right? Yeah. It's not strange. It's so strange, but I was super into it. I'm normally not one to relate to the naysayers in the internet comments, but I will say I also had a hard time that the Sick of It All song turned. I had a really hard time mentally that they turned the song from being something that's like ironic and like a criticism into like a legit plea for God to say God to save something. I don't know. I'm also just not a God person, so it was like a little weird for me. But I love that they did it. I did think I thought some of the lyrics were the ways that they sort of turned the lyrics around, I thought were clever. So yeah, I know. I thought these were good. I think absolutely. If you're an artist, how else are you going to help? You know what I mean? Like, this is a beautiful way to help, I thought.
What happened to your
audio, John?
Huh?
What happened to your audio?
What do you mean, what happened to my audio? Can you hear me?
I don't know. No, now you sound fine. Did you get very, very close to your mic or something?
Now I am.
I think you got very excited. I think I probably do that too. Sometimes I just like.
Now I'm far away.
Talk right into my microphone.
There's that Muppet thing on Ed Sullivan. Far. All right. Let's get back to work here. Listen, a bunch of tours have been canceled due to the Ukrainian-Russian. The Russian invasion of Ukraine. Green Day canceled the Russian show, showed in Iggy and Nick Cave. Iggy and Nick Cave were explicitly pro Ukraine, saying this is lame that Russia's doing this. Green Day had kind of a weird comment, not that weird. I hate to bust on Ukraine, I hate to bust on Green Day too much. They said we are aware that this moment is not about stadium rock shows. It's so much bigger than that. Fair. But we also know that rock and roll is forever, and we feel confident there will be a time and place for us to return in the future, which is kind of a weird statement. What really annoyed me, and not to get too off, like, Green Day canceled their show, and some punks were like, yeah, way to make a big stand, Green Day. It's like, you want them to play in an active war? It's like what? You want them to play country that's actively at war? It's like, I don't know, man. It's frustrating. This goes back to my core thesis, in that it's frustrating that we do live in a time where people talk in code and they won't straight up say, I believe in X, Y, Z, because at their core, I guess they know X, Y, Z is wrong. Or maybe they feel they'll be, quote, canceled for believing in X, Y, Z. But sometimes X, Y, Z is so odious, maybe you should be canceled, and sometimes not. You know, but it's just so frustrating to me that people talk in code and you can read between the lines, but you can't call them out on it because they haven't explicitly said X, Y, Z, and that bothers me. At any rate, I think Green Day and Iggy and Nick Cave made the right call. I wouldn't be playing Russia right now, or maybe ever. And so I don't think you can fault them for that. I think it was the right call. I do think Green Day's statement was a little weird, and honestly, kind of, Iggy, the punk godfather, he basically said, our thoughts are with the people in Ukraine, so we're not playing Russia. But Green Day's like, but we'll be back, Russia. Don't you worry. It seems a little Mickey Mouse to me. You know,
they're
used
car salesmen now.
Yeah.
Right? Green hair, like, yeah. It just kind of feels like they're trying to fucking sell you something. There's something really ick about it to me. And I still like some of the, you know, we've talked a lot about a lot of the stuff they've done in the last couple of years on the podcast, and I think most of it's, I've felt was like fine, but like kind of cheesy, but it's just like when it's just like everything they do, I'm like, well, it's fine, but it's kind of cheesy. Like at a certain point it starts to become like worse than that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It starts to be like, oh, well, all you do is stuff that is like just kind of cheesy. I don't know. Yeah, it did sort of feel like exactly what you said, that they just like didn't want to piss anybody off, which is like, you shouldn't, I don't know. Like, are you that worried about it? And also, again, listen, that one listener asked for politics. We have unwittingly talked about so much politics this episode, but like, you know, the people of Ukraine, like, they asked the people of Russia to fucking do something, to hit the streets, to protest, to do something to let their government know that they were not happy about this invasion. And, like, you know, by and large, the people of Russia did not rise to that call. You know, like, they did not answer that call. So, yeah, I don't know. Fuck them. I think it's great for people not to play there. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's fine for artists to just want to play music and to not want to just say, like, I will leave the politics to the politicians. That's not what I do. I just play music. But there was something so mealy-mouthed about Green Day's statement that I was with you, John. It just kind of irked me. Em, what do you think?
I agree that all of them should cancel their Russian shows. At this point, I don't think they should rebook their Russian shows. So, like, Green Day putting that in does seem insensitive, and it's kind of like a read the room sort of thing. Iggy Pop and Nick Cave's statements were both, like, great statements. They're short. They're to the point. And they acknowledge the situation. Like, especially with Nick Cave saying, like, Ukraine, we stand with you, and with all those in Russia who oppose this brutal act, and we pray that this this madness is brought to a close soon. And, you know, with Iggy Pop saying, like, you know, our thoughts are with the people in Ukraine, and we're standing in solidarity with them, you know, I think that's great, and it shows, again, like, where they stand and what, where their priorities are. And then with Green Day, it does seem like, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to lose some cash, but we'll be back to get it. And, you know, that's okay. And they're not mentioning.
And that's the place you said, like, this year, we lost some cash, but we'll be back again.
Yeah, and without, like, addressing the elephant in the room. And I thought that was really weird, especially for, you know, like a punk, or used to be a punk band, you know, being like, nope, we're not going to say, like, anything.
Yeah.
So those are my thoughts.
Well, listen, let's talk about some cool tours that are happening stateside. Danzig's going on tour. Not only is Danzig going on tour in the Southern California date, he or they will be doing all of Danzig 2 Lucifuge live. Also, finally going on tour after literally like a 3-year delay, Bauhaus is finally doing some East Coast, West Coast dates, and I will be at the Brooklyn show on Thursday. Not this Thursday, it's the Thursday of September. That's going to be cool. Also, Blondie and the Damned are going on tour. Not that many dates, about 15 dates. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 10 dates. I will probably be going to the Philly show. So a lot of cool shows coming up, a lot of cool tours. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. These acts are all older acts. But that being said, looks pretty rad. I'm going to 2 of these, maybe even 3. I'm psyched. Hallie Bullet, would you go to any of these shows? Would you go to all of these shows?
Yeah, I've never seen Bauhaus, and that'd be, like, kind of fucking amazing. Like, that announcement came into my email, and I was like, ooh. I was like, do I need to do that? So I might pull the trigger on that. I don't know, like, I saw Blondie, like, a few years back, and I was a little underwhelmed. I'd
That's
seen
the
Blondie,
word.
Like, I hadn't seen Blondie back in the day, but I had seen Blondie when she released that, like, what was it, like, Maria, like, what was that song? She had, like, kind of a comeback hit, like, in the aughts, and I saw her around that time and thought she was phenomenal, so I'm like, really glad that I caught that. When I saw her, like, a few years ago, she played with Elvis Costello, and I was like, man, is it just, like, hard to be, like, amazing when you're older? I know not to be true because I've seen so many amazing, like, older performers, but then Elvis Costello came on and just completely blew her off the stage, and I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. It seems like, I don't know if it was that night, but it seems like something had kind of been lost there. So I don't know that I'll do that. I don't know. I guess it'd be fun to see the Damned. Will it be fun to see the Damned, John? Will they be good?
I've seen the Damned 5 times. Every time they have been at least very good. Twice they have been at punk at not the last punk rock one, but the one before that. They did all Machine Gun Etiquette. It was amazing. Like, you wouldn't, like, some, you know, sometimes album sets can be really not that great. It was like, bang, bang. Like, it was so awesome. Another awesome time I saw them, where they did all the first album and all of the fourth album, the Black Album. It was so amazing. I saw them 3 other times, where they basically did the Damned set. Actually, when I saw them in Philadelphia, they were actually really, really good. I saw them at, I will now detail with every single time I've seen the Damned. I saw them at the Black Club in San Jose in a tiny club, which was real cool. And then I also saw them one other time at Slim's in San Francisco, which was good, very good, not great. So yes, the Damned are actually, veiny and sounds amazing. The only, I would say, maybe frustrating thing about the Damned is they kind of lean more towards the goth psych aspect than the punk aspect. And Vanian sounds great, but unlike, say, Danzig, he doesn't go edge with his voice because I think he's trying to protect his voice. So he does a very smooth delivery as opposed to a barking delivery, which some Damned songs have. That being said, I don't know if I'll be seeing them in a casino, so I don't know if it'll be that. I don't know if the atmosphere will be that good. And also, the fact of the matter is, as amazing as the Damned are, Blondie is bigger, so most people are going to be there for Blondie. So that, mm-hmm. I don't know. The Damned might just come out and, quote, do a job and then leave, which I don't even blame them for doing that, you know? Yeah. That being said, if you've never seen the Damned, I'd say at least see them once because they are very good live. I would guess that in this atmosphere, they would be very good. Not great just because, A, they're opening, B, most people probably don't care about the Damned, C, it's in a casino or whatever, which is not the ideal place to see the Damned.
Yeah.
But at Punk Rock Bowling, it was not such, everyone wanted the Damned to be great, so the energy was there, and the Damned came out and were mega great. You know, that's the best way to see a band, you know.
So good, yeah.
Yeah.
And Danzig, listen, I might fly out to California. Did I tell you guys my disastrous Halloween adventure?
I don't think so.
No.
So on Halloween night, Danzig was doing only Elvis in a cocktail lounge. So he came in, he sat down, and he was doing only Elvis songs. And so I said, I'm going to fly out. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He says he's never doing it ever again. And I'm always so betwixt and between. Like, so my cousin, well, it's never, my cousin's husband, who's basically my cousin, he's a little bit older than I am. He's got three kids. Well, no, my cousin and her husband have three kids. Her husband, who is basically my cousin, one of their sons likes Gwar. He likes Gwar. He actually got me into Gwar years and years and years ago, and now I like Gwar way better than he does. Be like Gwar. He said, you want to go see Gwar? And I said, all right, let's go see Gwar. That was the day before Danzig. I had wanted to fly out to Vegas to see Gwen. I would say, I'll fly out to Vegas. I'll see Gwen do the Gwen solo thing, because she's not going to be doing that. And then I'll fly to L.A. to see Danzig do all Elvis. But instead of doing that, I decided to go to Gwar on Thursday and then fly to see Danzig on Friday. And I was flying out at like 5 a.m., and I was going to get into L.A. at noon. Danzig was I'll go to Amoeba Records and just have a nice day in L.A. and then fly back. I stop off in Chicago. I'm in Chicago at 9 a.m. They're like, flight delayed, 30 minutes. I'm like, no problem. I got 12 hours, you know. Flight delayed, an hour. No problem. I got 11 hours. Flight delayed, 2 hours. No problem. I got 8 hours. Flight canceled. Every flight. You guys remember when, like, all the flights were canceled?
Yeah.
I was trapped in Chicago for 2 days. I could not get a flight out of anywhere. No. I didn't get to see Danzig. I lost all that money. I couldn't get out of Chicago. And plus, American Airlines were total dicks to me. And it was just brutal. It was brutal. So I'm thinking about flying out to see Danzig to see Lucifuge. But I don't want to have the same terrible occurrence again. You know? American Airlines suck. Do not need American Airlines. They suck. At any rate, how many more chances am I going to see Danzig? I mean, he's made it clear that he doesn't really want to do that many live shows, but obviously he wants to do a few because he's doing live shows, you know, so I don't know, man. How many more chances am I going to see Danzig?
He was so weird the last time I saw him. And, like,
he stormed off
stage like a paranoid baby, and I just made me, like, I don't have any trust in him. Don't have any trust in him.
And were you at that? Were you at the Onion Soup show? Is that the show you're referring to?
No, it was when he did, because I was out at Bonnaroo and he played Bonnaroo.
I think that's the Onion Soup show, isn't it?
Like, I don't know.
Let me look it up. I'll be real quick. Hollywood, you know Greg Daly?
No.
Okay, Greg Daly has the inside info. He was. Let me look this up real quick. So
this made me uncomfortable. Danzig's whole deal.
Oh, that was fun fest. So what, like, did you do at Bonnaroo?
He just, like, got, like, weirdly upset at someone in the crowd. And then stormed off stage mid-show. And then, like, everyone just kind of awkwardly stood around, like, is he really not coming back? And then, like, he did come back, but it always seemed kind of mad about it. Just the whole thing was very awkward. It made me wildly uncomfortable.
Well, my response to that is, you know, when you get to a certain level of great art, you get some free passes. And what annoys me about Danzig fans is people want every musician to be their best friend. When in music has Danzig ever said he's your best friend? His lyrics are always, I'm a demon from hell, I kill things, and I have sex with strippers. That's every song Danzig ever wrote, you know? So why do you think he's going to be your friend? He's a weirdo, and I love that he's a weirdo.
Then be like a fucking badass and get on stage and do your shit, and, like, don't let, like, little stupid pissy shit bother you and you throw a fit about it and storm off the stage. It just, that's exactly what it was. It seemed so counter to, like, his persona. It seemed so pissy was the thing.
Fair enough.
It was just, like, not... just, like, did not really seem very punk to me, right? It seems like very, like, sort of like
Dion-ish.
Yeah, like a little like part diva and part just like paranoid, like insecure, like brat at, like, I don't know, in like nursery school or something. Like,
very strange.
Well, listen, Glenn, I'm a fan. Chance. Even though Hallie hates you, I'm a fan, Glenn. And I will be there, maybe, to see you if American Airlines doesn't screw me over again. Don't use American Airlines, people. They suck. All right, let's see. And more. Any last words on any of these cool tours? Hallie might be going to see The Damned and Blondie, maybe. I will be seeing oh, she might also see Bauhaus. I will be at Bauhaus. I will most likely be at Blondie and Damned. And I might even be at Danzig. How about you, Enmore? What's your stance?
Come to Canada.
Please.
I want to see Bauhaus. I want to see Blondie and The Damned. Danzig is cool.
And come to New York. You're not that far from New York. Come down to New York. I'll be there. Hallie will probably be there. Come to the New York show.
Oh, yeah. That's not too bad, actually, the drive.
And where do you live, basically? Alberta? No.
No. I'm about 3 hours outside of Adam White.
You're three. I don't know what that means.
So I live in a small town in Ontario. So I'm about 3 or 4 hours outside of Niagara Falls.
Let me see here. Do you live? And I realize we're dragging tonight's episode out, but I don't care. You want to politics?
All good.
Oh man, actually, I'm technically all the way to North Dakota. I didn't realize that. Do you live near Missouni?
No.
Sudbury?
Oh, that's way too far north.
Too far north? Oh. Do you live near Mississauga?
No. Wait, London. Mississauga?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No,
How about Kingstono? Peterborough? Am I close?
Yes, Peterborough.
All right, so let's see how far that is from Brooklyn. All right. Shit, I messed this up already.
Are you trying to arrange a podcast field trip?
I love it. Yes.
All right, here we go. No, not Brooklyn, Whitby, Ontario. Brooklyn, New York. Get out of here. Here we go. M is exactly about 8 hours. Should that be right?
Are you 8 hours is nothing.
Well, to drive.
Oh, man. Well, maybe we should put together a flight collection pot, Hallie. You and I. Well, 8 hours. I mean, that's no walk in the park, 8 hours. Let me do Expedia. And then we'll wrap up this podcast. Peterborough, Ontario. Flight.
Oh, you'd have to fly. Yeah, I'd have to go to Toronto. I'd have to fly out of Toronto.
Toronto Airport.
Yeah.
How far? YYZ, a Rush song. How far is the drive to, Hallie, should she fly to JFK or LaGuardia?
Let me think. I do JFK.
All right, JFK. I believe the show is like September, I think it's September 9, I think it is. And do you want to stay one day or you want to fly out the next day? How long you want to stay? You're flying in the 9th. No, the 8th.
The show's on the 9th.
No, but we're going to the one on the 8th.
Oh, a good day or two. How about two?
All right, so you find out on Saturday. Let's see what that costs. I'm sure this is riveting for the listeners, but maybe it is. Maybe we can make something happen. Here we go. Let's see.
Maybe there's other people from Canada wondering if they can make it to that show in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Trying to figure out if it's in their budget.
All right, we're getting the price right now. It's pulling it up on X. Hattie, well, do you find Expedia is the best way to get prices? Why? Only $187, Em. You can make that happen.
Wait, sorry? How much?
$187, round trip. Fly out at 10:30 a.m. You're going to get there by noon. And then, Em, you can make this happen. $187.
That's pretty decent.
Well, I think Em should strongly consider coming to Bauhaus with me and Hallie. And yes. And I also think that Em and Hallie should strongly consider coming to Philadelphia on July 2nd. And we'll talk a little more about that on a future episode. Hallie, do you want to play a song? And then we'll come back and I'll say something kind of sad. And then we'll wrap up with something sad but nice to listen to.
I mean, I definitely have a good song to play, but I'm also happy to skip it if we've just, like, been talking for too long. People are like,
all right,
make me listen to a song right now.
quite sadly, Nikki Tesco of the members has passed away. I don't know a ton about the members except that I like them a lot, and I especially like the first couple of albums. I also love a 12-inch single by the members called Offshore Banking Business / Pennies by the Pound. The members, if you don't know, they were kind of a early punkish, popish, skies band. Kind of one of these bands that were in the punk domain, but not like oi, oi, oi. Kind of almost more radio friendly. Kind of like the band that did Another Girl, Another Planet, whatever the band that is. So kind of like that, kind of like the Fabulous Poodles, you know, kind of punk, but also kind of pop, but not punk, not pop punk. Kind of in both fields. Almost kind of like early Elvis Costello or Stiff
like
Records.
Power Pop.
Yeah. Correct. Sure. So anyway, the members were a real cool band. They had a definite ska influence. Their big hit was That's the Sound of the Suburbs. But I have this 12-inch single that I adore called Offshore Banking Business, Penny by the Pound. We're going to play that. R.I.P. Nikki Tesco. You made some great music, and we'll see you next week. This is the members doing Offshore Banking Business 12-inch mix.
Give you nothing but trouble. America.